The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you to the ISO for the invitation. I think, how much time?
We have
45 minutes. 45 minutes, okay. Thank you so much today so for the invitation. It's obvious we think that between the Mexican and US left and socialist groups, it's strategic from both sides of the border to have strong relationships with, for some kind of obvious reasons, that you take some look to the backyard sometime will be good. That's a joke. At the same time, the name of the talk is Crisis and Resistance in Mexico. Yes, if you have seen some of the news, the crisis in Mexico is quite deep. But if you don't, I'm going to make some resume of some news around this year. On 1st of January, we start the year with a gasoline increase of the prices. Around 20% in some parts of the country. It's quite a paradox that we are an oil country and the gas line is so high. We don't have facilities to refine, so we export the oil and we get back the gas line. And this gas line increase is consequence of the recent energetical reform made by Peña Nieto's government. And it made a lot of new wave of riots and of riots, even robberies, mass robberies to supermarkets and so on, and pickets in the highways all around the country. I mean, so we start the year around the first weeks of January quite a move. On March 2, Cecilio Pineda, a journalist, was killed in Guerrero. On March 19, Ricardo Monluis, a journalist in Veracruz, was murdered. On March 23, Miroslava Bridge, an old, also a journalist, was killed in Chihuahua. She was a research journalist involved in women trata topics, and she was killed outside her house. On 15th of April, Maximo Rodriguez, journalist, was killed in Baja California Sur. April 29, journalist Filiberto Álvarez was killed in Morelos. May 3, in an army operative against what we call huachicoleros, that are people that stole gas line illegally for then sell it around, the army killed with un tiro de gracia, we say, with a grass shot in the head, a guy lying in the street, in the floor. Absolutely surround, and the army killed him. On May 3 also, Lesbi Berlin Osorio was appeared dead inside the National University campus. It was a femicide. Lesbi used to be more or less a solidarity girl with the Zapatist communities. And of course, police and the university authorities said that it's obvious that it was suicide. When it's clear that it was a femicide case. On May 15, Javier Valdez, also a journalist that was involved in researching drug dealers' topics and the research, was killed in Sinaloa. One of his last speech was saying that if they are killing journalists for saying the truth, well, then come and kill us all. And unfortunately, it happened. On May 20, Miguel Vázquez and his brother, both leaders of the Huichol and Wirarica nation in the west of Mexico, were killed by the cartel of Jalisco Nueva Generación, a criminal gang. They are involved in indigenous struggles in defense of territory. On June 1, Itzel, a girl of 15 years old, was raped in the streets of Mexico City. After she was raped, the person that raped her tried to kill her. Itzel defend herself, killed this person, and the police said that she used excessive self-defense, right? On the first days of June, the normalist students of the school Justo Sierra Méndez of Cañada Honda in Aguascalientes were attacked by the police. This is a normalist school, just like Ayotzinapa. We have 16 of normal rural schools. This one is only for women students, and the government wanted to make it mixed and to reduce the number of students. They were in a struggle and they were repressed by the local government in Aguascalientes. Between the 16th and 19th of June, the Nation GU on San Luis Potosí was attacked by miners and highway constructors. There are about three or four communal leaders that have been killed in the last months. On June 19, we had the Pegasus Scandalous, that a Mexican government has bought a software for of a Israeli company to bug and to spy the cell phones and computers and all the stuffs of journalists, of human rights defenders, for many, for some social leaders in some moments. On June 21, in Tiripetío, Michoacán, another rural school, the students, in this case it's a men school, were attacked because they were in a picket demanding more resources to the rural school. Gael Solorio received a gunshot from the police, and she stayed a couple of days in coma. He has woken up a couple of days ago. He's not able to speak. He's in a delicate situation. On 26th of June, Salvador Adame, a journalist, was murdered in Michoacán. 27th of June, Mario Luna's house was opened by the night, and his car was turned on fire. Mario Luna is a leader of the Yaqui Nation in Sonora, in the north of Mexico, and they are in struggle against a robber of water. On 29th of June, Mesli Sarabia, leadership of UPBA 28 de Octubre, a popular organization of trade, of small trade and street trade markets, was killed. She was kneed and she received a shot in Puebla. And on May 10, when Mexico is Mother's Day, we celebrate Mother's Day, Miriam Rodriguez, the mother of a disappeared girl in Tamaulipas, was killed outside her house. Miriam Rodriguez was a leader of a collective, of a movement of disappeared families people. And a couple of weeks before, she had meetings with the local governor of Tamaulipas, and she said, "Hey, I'm receiving threats. I'm scared for my life. And nobody heard her. She was murdered on May 10. The other public member of this movement of disappeared families in Tamaulipas, Guillermo Gutierrez Riestra, whose daughter was kidnapped and she disappeared since 5 years ago, a member of our organization, is also receiving threats. And in that way, we want to thank to the ISO, because you've made some with help, with solidarity, and with not making that, especially the case of Guillermo and of Miriam, could get out of the Mexican border. So we want to thank you in that way. So what are the balance sheet of the results of all this some news? We have, in 2016, 23,000 of murders, of violent deaths. We are in second place. Syria, in the same year, have 50,000 deaths. Then we are Mexico, 23,000, 17,000 in Afghanistan, 16,000 in Iraq. I mean, we are the second more violent country all around the world. In total, we have around 200,000 deaths since 2006, when current President Felipe Calderón declared a war against drugs and militarized all the country. We have seven, as you can hear, seven journalists killed in during the year, and 36 since Peña Nieto's took place. We have 35,000 of people that have to be to change their home, desplazados, because of violence. And we have, in the most optimistic case, 26,000 of disappeared people. Disappeared people, for Latin American and Mexico tradition, it's an important topic, and I will make a quick stop. Disappearance, we think, is the worst case of repression. I mean, when the state kills you, I mean, it's obviously so hard, but you have a body, you have a story, you have the idea, you know what happened to the people that was killed. When a people gets disappeared, the objective of the state is not even take you out of the scenario, but even to make the image that you were never born, you never existed. Mm-hmm. So we think in that way that the disappeared people, they don't disappear when we name them. That's why about Ayotzinapa issue, we're still saying they took them alive, and we want them alive. And it's what the state, and the state has to give us answers. So I know it's hard to make all this esta revisión. But well, how we are in this situation? Why we get to this point? Broadly, we can say that there were, in the last years, some changes in the way of capital is getting accumulated. We have as a main dollar resource about four main sources: oil, of course, and commodity exports. We have also all the money that our brothers that are living here sent back to Mexico. We have tourism, and we have all the drugs and an illegal economy. That those are the four main sources of dollars. So those our national economies and maquila, of course, are the main center around the economy is working out in Mexico. So that means that we need that the capital needs to have high levels of violence so they can control absolutely all the territory. For example, in Tamaulipas, where Miriam, where Guillermo are from, everybody knows that you have to be at 7 p.m. in your house, nobody outside in the streets because it's too dangerous. So in that conditions, I don't know, trying to make a demonstration, a picket, or something, you can imagine how difficult it is. But at the same time, the Mexican regime is going through a deep crisis. I mean, in one hand, we have a very complex violent situation that breaks up all the social, the tejido social, how do you say, the social networks inside, the communities are broken and so on. But at the same time, we have a huge crisis in the top. The current party in government, the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, which was in power for 70 years after the Mexican Revolution of 1910, that in the first period, in the meantime of these 70 years, it was a nationalist revolutionary tendency or party that, I mean, they received Trotsky, as you may know, Lázaro Cárdenas, who was member of the PRI in that time, received Trotsky, received all the Spanish people that came as political exile from Franco's dictatorship. We received as country many also people from South America that were also in exile because of Pinochet, Videla, etc. Dictatorships. It was a PRI that also nationalized the oil industry against the United States companies. It was a nationalist PRI that nationalized light, but it was also a PRI that controlled absolutely all the workers' movement, the peasant movements. It was also the PRI that in the 68 killed thousands of students in Tlatelolco Square. So all the 20th century we had the PRI in that situation, nationalist revolutionary situation that I'm not going to make more deep because I'm trying to talk about what's happening now. But in the 80s, it has a neoliberal turn. It stopped to be nationalist and it became a neoliberal turn. And after that, between the 88, 89, and the first years of the 90s, we enter absolutely to the neoliberal era. We signed NAFTA. By the way, NAFTA has been a disaster for us. It can be obvious to say that it's not true that we're gain because of NAFTA. The country, the agricultural production was destroyed after NAFTA. The chances that having this violence are rooted in many houses because of NAFTA. But why? Because when NAFTA destroyed all the agricultural, our national industry, etc., that left millions of people with basically two options. One, coming here, migrate to the United States, and two, get involved in somehow with the drugs economy, with the illegal economy. Because of Mexican agriculture is not subsidized and the United States agriculture is subsidized, it's impossible to have competition with prices. It's obvious that United States agriculture is more has more technology, etc. So for an average peasant, in many cases, it's more important, it's more profitable to grow opium than growing corn, for example, because of those reasons. And at the same time, we have millions of young people that has not a chance to get any job. And there's a philosophy between some popular songs in the country that says, "Well, I prefer to live short, but good, with luxury and with many things, that have a long life, starving or." With economic problems. So that's how can you understand that the criminal gangs has a space for recruit people, for recruit young people, that nobody gets retired of that profession, it's obvious. And it's a constant way of that. That's why you're saying that now you're facing that capitalism is a capitalism of death. And it's not like a theoretical or broadly political statement. I mean, it's happening. Capitalism is dead for us. In that context, the revolutionary social party, is also facing a new crisis. This neoliberal regime that started, as I said, in the 80s, in the 90s. Is getting into crisis because of the broad the new changes in the international economic situation. We made 20 years of political economy around the NAFTA, and now that it's not clear what's going to happen with NAFTA, it's also happening a deeper crisis. But at the same time, in the last 6 years, we've been facing at least three moments that had put the Peña Nieto's government and the entire regime in crisis. The first moment, in 2012, the Yo Soy 132 movement, a youth student movement, raised up against Peña Nieto presidential campaign. It was a mass movement that bring to the scenario a new generation of young people that are precarious workers in the cities, and that they are saying we don't want the PRI comeback. PRI has been 12 years in 2000 until 2012 out of the government, and the women are saying we know what the PRI means. We know that the PRI means Tlatelolco in the 68 murder, we know that the pre means all these shit, so we don't want them. And there were thousands of students and young people in the street attacking him. Unfortunately, Peña Nieto won the election because democracy in Mexico is like a bad joke. But then Ayotzinapa came. In 2014, as you may know, 43 students of Ayotzinapa Rural School were disappeared by the state, by the army, and until today we are still demanding their life presentation. During that time, as you may know, we had the biggest demonstrations all around Mexico. On November 20 of 2014, it was the peak, the highest level of the movement, and I don't know, we were feeling more or less like in Egypt during the Arab Spring. We really feel that it was so close, the possibility for a change. I know that Egypt developed later more complicated, but we were more or less like that. Unfortunately, the broad social left was not enough organized, not only us, but in general, all the left was not well organized, and we think that we lost that chance. At the same time, since 2013, the teachers' basic schools movement were rise up against the educational reform of Peña Nieto and make lots of resistance against that measures. We have now, as other social actors, lots of movements against megaproyectos that we are calling mines, highways, water facilities, etc. And most of them are organized by indigenous communities. We also have a new moment rising up of a new feminist movement that is against femicide, against violence against women. In Mexico, the average rate of femicides is 7 women are killed per day, more or less. In most of the cases, by her husbands, boyfriends, or by any men that think that women are property of them, so they can't take even their life. And in all the cases, police says that it was a passional crime. It was things that the guy was jealous and things get out of control and shit like that. It's a huge and strong women movement against that. And it's also a quite interesting experience of the electricians' trade union. The electricians' trade union, they were taken out of job in 2009. The public company was disappeared. And since then, they have been in the streets fighting. And now they are getting to a kind of transitional solution to getting back to work. At the same time, the electrician trade union organized the public users of light in assemblies that I am in strike of payment. I don't pay light since 2009, and thousands of people.
That also.
But also thousands of people doesn't pay light, and they are organizing a national assembly of electrician users, of light users, linked with the SMEG, with the electrician trade union, which is also a quite interesting experience. So the broad idea that I want to make is that in Mexico we have a deep crisis, a really hard crisis, but at the same time we have lots of struggles, lots of social movements. Nearly anyway in the country, there's something. There's a small, big, medium-sized movement, but almost everywhere, it's some kind of struggle. And in that way, we think that there are two main ways that left and social movements are taking what to do for this crisis. We think that there's an institutional way to stop the crisis, and we think that it's another way to a struggle, anti-institutional way in somehow to stop that crisis. The first option, the institutional way to stop the crisis, is led by Morena, the López Obrador movement party. López Obrador is a really famous politician that came from PRI, then went to the Democratic Revolutionary Party, and then split and found Morena. Morena is like the ancient PRI, like the PRI before neoliberalism. We think that he offers the past as future. He says that we have to stop neoliberalism with new nationalist policies, like Cárdenas and so on, when the context and the world has obviously changed a lot. But at the same time, its role, it's quite complicated in this context, because the social and the political crisis is so deep that we think that maybe, and it's an hypothesis, López Obrador campaign can be used as an exit to the crisis, but for the ruling class. I mean, like, okay, it's a mess, but let's go everybody to the polls, everybody to elections, and so on. And we also have some kind of red lines about the program with them. For example, about mining, 30% of the national of the country is concession to mining, mostly for Canadian and US internet transnational companies. And López Obrador said about mining that okay, when we get to the chair, to the office, we will have meetings with the transnational companies, and we will convince them that they keep taking out the gold, but with environmental care, please. So it's not possible. He also proposes that abortion, that gay rights go to referendum, and of course we think that women's rights are not in vote, are not in discussion. We cannot go and vote what women can or not do with their own bodies. And also it's a quite caudillista, we say, party. All the party is structured around López Obrador figure. If López Obrador, I don't know, disappeared, he died for something strange reason or disappeared scenario, there's nobody, there's no other person inside Morena that could fill the space of the leader. Everything is around López Obrador. And there's no democracy inside. There's no kind of any kind of discussion. But, and it's a huge but, Morena at the same time has a mass support. It's possible he's going now in the first place on the polls for the next year elections. And it's a kind of debate of what to do in that. We think, as the Revolutionary Workers' Party, that we cannot go with López Obrador because of the first reasons. But we also have to make some kind of dialogue with the López Obrador people and not accusing them of the traitors to the worker class or stuff like that. And the other thing, and that's why we opt for the second possible exit to the crisis, that it's the struggle exit and it's an anti-capitalist exit. In that context, there's, maybe you know, there's a new about the Zapatists. The Zapatists are organizing since the 90s the National Indigenous Congress. The National Indigenous Congress is a kind of front of different nations, indigenous nations all around the country. And just to get your some examples, in the Indigenous National Congress, we have Cheran, a community in Michoacán that are also making a self-government experience, defending their forest against the illegal wood destruction. They are part of the National Indigenous Congress. The Yaquis in Sonora that are making a struggle against a water line that is going to take the water from their lands to the major city. And Sonora, it's a desert. It's in border with Arizona, so it's a desert. So if they take your water, you can imagine what's going to happen. They are also in the National Indigenous Congress. Ostula, Xayacalan people in the border of Colima and Michoacán, in the Pacific Coast are also building an autonomous and self-government experience. The Wirarika and Huicholes people, they are also in struggle against mining and against highways. I mean, the National Indigenous Congress is kind of front that articulates some part, not all, that's an important detail, but some many important struggles against mining, against megaproyectos of the indigenous. And the National Indigenous Congress decided recently in May to build an indigenous government council. I mean, an indigenous government council that will propose to govern Mexico in somehow, and that they will choose an indigenous woman, Marichuy, as a spokesperson, it's okay, vocera, spokesperson, that will also run for elections in 2018. So, we think, and they will run to elections like in an institutional way, like an independent candidate. That means that the state requires about 800,000 of signatures all around the country for making that. We think that it's possible. And Marichuy, she said, okay, yes, we want to be in the polls and so on, but if you want, don't vote for us. What we want is a campaign of struggle and a campaign to organize. That means, for example, that in many of the places where there are social movements that are facing strong violence, a official presidential candidate could arrive, make a rally with all the press, with security, because she's a former presidential candidate to the president. And say, here in this town, in this village, we are facing mining of that company, and they are linked with the drug dealers, and they are also linked with the state and with the police and with the local government and so on. They are thinking in this kind of campaign of struggle and denounce. And at the same time, as I said, we think that there's a broadly space of people that were in 132, that were in struggle with Ayotzinapa, that they are getting radicalized. So we think that in the best case, in the best possible case, the Marichuy campaign could put together, maybe not all, but some of struggle experiences to build a kind of broadly front, a political and social bloc that is in the left of Morena, clearly anti-capitalist, clearly against femicide, clearly against megaproyectos, etc., etc., etc. Of course, it's not so easy. Zapatist relationship with no indigenous movements and with the left, it's a long story and quite complicated story of alliances, breakups, and so on. So there are some kind of tactics, problems, and things like that we have to solve, but we think anyway that with all these problems in our heads, to go and try to build this block. Maybe it's through Marichuy. Maybe it could open other ways in the next day, but in the next weeks or months. But there's a chance. There's a social and political chance. To do it. There are many issues that are not solved about that. That, for example, the National Indigenous Council, Congress, what will be the relationship with trade unionists, with non-indigenous people, etc. What will happen, for example, if the next year we go to fraud, because electoral fraud is quite common in Mexico. I mean, corporatism and violence around elections is quite obvious and cynical even. What will they do if there's a fraud against López Obrador, for example? It's not clear. What will López Obrador will do for with an anti-capitalist candidate as Marichuy? And this is and the National Indigenous Congress are saying that, well, Marichuy is a spoken person for the people of below, and it's a candidate for the people of above. I mean, they are not trying to win elections. In fact, they are not so cared of what average of the votation they are having. Of course, it will be, if everybody goes well, an interesting number. And that. So, in conclusion, we think that we have to push in this way of getting how an alternative and struggle way to get out of the Mexican crisis. There are lots of debates that we socialists have to face in this context with the Zapatists, for example, how to understand autonomism and taking power. For example, it's a huge debate around of what to do, how we understand the political struggle, and but at the same time, how to defend to all the attacks of repression and so on, because the crisis is so deep that, and that's why, for example, López Obrador has so much support, because López Obrador says, okay, after the elections, we will start to changing things. So it's, in many people, it's like, okay, well, maybe it's not the best reason and so on, but it's a way that immediately we can stop this. I mean, we have to immediately, right now, stop femicide. We need to stop disappearance. We need to stop the murders in the street. That, yes, it's against some people of the social movement, but it's a social violence spread all around. It's not just because that you are an activist. It's just because you live in the wrong place, you were in the wrong hour, and in the wrong moment. It's kind of destruction of the social of the Mexican society. And in that context, we, the Revolutionary Workers' Party, a small socialist organization for these kind of tasks that we have in front, we are also involved in a broad political front, the political and the workers, la OPT, la Organización Política del Pueblo y los Trabajadores. I don't know, more or less, you understand? I don't know how to translate it. Yeah. And it's a political front with the Electricians Trade Union that wants to be a political front clearly with a class definition, clearly with an active class and workers profile, and that we think that it could also be part of this non-institutional way out to the crisis. Of course, there are lots of details that I cannot say because of time and many letters and so on, of groups and so on, but this is more or less our situation. This is more or less what we are facing. And once again, thank you to ISO, to Socialist Conference, for the invitation, and hope to you understood something, and hope we have a good debate now.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.